Jane.
Thank you, Hannah. Good afternoon, everybody. We're looking at agenda paper 3 on rate regulated activities. I appreciate it looks a slightly strange paper. It looks more like an exam question because we've set you some fact patterns, asked you for the accounting entries, or more particularly what assets, liabilities, income and expenditure you would expect to see or like to see or think should be the accounting for these different transactions. And the reason for that is what we're really interested in knowing is how you perceive these transactions and what you think the economics are that would be driving the accounting. So we've tried not to give you an analysis of what we think. We're looking for some open thinking from you. I'd also ask you to keep in mind the questions on page 3, which again ask you for what the assets, liabilities, income and expenditure are, but really focus on what your reasons are behind your answers, and to point out, unlike in an exam question, there are no right and wrong answers. It's really just we're interested in your thinking. We're going to slightly change the order of play. There are 4 scenarios, A, B, C and D. We would like to take your responses to scenarios C and D, where the customer is paying through the revenue, before we look at A and B, which are the scenarios where it's a government grant or a contribution from the property developer. Before we get into that, I would just like to remind you of a slight error on page 8. We sent a note round about this, but in the table of cash flows, the very last number in the table under option D, which is the receipt of cash through customer billings from 20X3, should read 1.6 and not 2, because they've already received some of the income in the earlier years and just spreading the 16 million over the next 10 years. Other than that, Michael, you've just got one or two things to add?
Just a couple of points. Obviously, this is part of our efforts to see if we can develop an accounting model that would work for defined rate regulation. And seeing if we can draw on some of the principles in IFRS 15, even if we think that IFRS 15 on its own wouldn't necessarily work. Just finally, really, with the discussions of the A, B, C and D today, particularly interested in what you see as the rights and the obligations that drive your views on what you think the accounting should be.
So with that, we'd like to open up the floor, and again, if we can focus on...
You could all hand in your question, your answers, and then we'll start marking.
As I said, there are no right or wrong answers, so please don't be afraid to be the first to start, because nobody will be able to tell you that you're wrong.
Of any prices.
Or everybody gets a pass.
Join the project.
Join the project.
Let me get some Easter eggs left over.
Yen Chow.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Thank you for the paper. I always like the paper written by you, because you always raise some examples, and it's easier for us to understand the issues and guide us to further discussion. With regard to the questions for option A to D, I have my answer is that for option A, I believe that the entity W should account for 20 million received from the government as a government grant. And this government grant should be presented as a government grant related to assets. So that means at the end of first year, when the entity received grant, the entity should recognize an asset, and in meanwhile should recognize a deferred income. that is liability, shows on the balance sheet. At the end of, at the end of second year, once the entity completes the construction of the plant, then the PPE should be recognized. And then there is no changes to the liability, that's the deferred income. In 2003, that's the third year, the plant still starts to, you know, to be depreciated over the of its useful life, that is 40 years. And in meanwhile, the deferred income arising from the government the grant related to assets also should start to be recognized in profit and loss on a systematic basis of the useful life of assets. That is also the, you know, 40 years. So each year will go to P&L about $500,000 each year. So this is the first for option A. For option B, it seems to us that the economic substance of the option B is similar to the option A. That's the entity receive the plant free of charge. And also it seems that it obligates the entity to provide us water service in the next few years, So if so, the accounting treatment will be similar to option A, that when the asset, when the plant received, the entity should recognize PPE as well as deferred income, and then amortize the, you know, the deferred income. But for option B, there are also some different views on option B. Some people believe that a question whether there is really a present obligation in place for entity W, because it's a little slight difference, because this is the entity A and another entity that is a developer. Business, you know, both of them are business enterprises. So it looks like that the entity received a donation from the end developer. So, and there is no obligation to the developer once they receive the assets. So in this case, some people believe that they should recognize as a gain immediately. Just, you know, some people think about that. But based on option A and option B, we believe that the inclusion of the cost of the new water treatment plant from the rate charged to the customer is not relevant to the carrying amount of assets. They are separate events. So in this case, in my understanding, I think for option A and option B, or case A and case B, actually not relevant to rate regulated activities. I think there is no special case, you know. So, and for option C, the substance of the option C is that the entity borrowed money and used the borrowed money to construct the plant, and then use the plant to deliver the water services. So it's similar to other transactions which are undertaken by other enterprises, borrow money, construction, and then deliver a service to the customers. So in this case, I think in 2000, at the end of 2001, the entity should recognize a case assets, that is, and also a liability, respectively. Let's say borrowing, you know, liabilities, that is 20 million. But at the end of the second year, the entity should recognize a PPE asset because the plant has been constructed, completed. But it's a little bit different because there is a borrowing cost there. So the borrowing cost should be capitalized and be included in the PPE's carrying amount. And at the end of 2003, the PP should start to, you know, to depreciate. And also, at that year, the revenue will be recognized at amount based on increased regulated rate when the entity delivered the water services to the customers. So that means before that, there is no, you know, the rate regulator activity carrying amount of the PPEs. For option D, I think the recognition of plant assets and the recognition of revenue, which based on increased rated regulated rate, should not be integrated or connected to each other, because the price increased at the first year, not the third year, but they are separate. So the plant assets should be recognized and measured at its cost, including borrowing costs. And the revenue should be recognized and measured at its consideration received from the customers, even if it is based on its increased, you know, regulated rate. And when the entity provide water service to the customers and without any adjustment made. So this is my view. Thank you.
We didn't have a rate regulated asset in any of the four.
Yeah, in my view, we do need any rate regulated assets as well as liabilities.
Can I just ask a question? In option B, you talked about there being two views, and that in one there'd be a deferred income recognised, but in the others held a view that you wouldn't recognise that, you'd recognise income. But when you talked about the first one, you talked about there being an obligation to provide services, water treatment services. And I just wondered what impact did that have on the accounting that you were describing?
Yeah, it's because debt credit, if you want to get, you know, recognize that deferred income or liability there should be an obligation there. So it likes a conditional donation received from developer. Once you receive the plant, there is a condition. In the future, you have to use this plant to provide water services to customers. I think it's based on contract, and the contract maybe should have this kind of terms there. So in this case, maybe there is some sort of obligation there. Then we can recognize the deferred income in the, you know, as a liability.
So identifying
it. I try to find the underlying concept there, you know.
Yeah.
But some people said there is no obligation there. You just receive the donation from other developers and you should recognize again immediately. Yeah, so but this is I'm not very quite sure. I remember that I think many years ago, actually the board wants to revisit IS-20 to make sure whether government grants you received, whether there is really deferred income meets the definition of liability. It's similar.
I guess, yeah, if you can just focus on the differences, I guess.
So C and D is similar. Answer SNCHAR basically saying you recognise the cash that comes in, the loan that you take out, and the plant as you build it, and then when you're earning revenue in C and D, recognise the revenue for the goods and services you provided at the time you provide them. So, so for example, you've got 2 million of extra revenue coming in option D in year one, and two, and three, and C it starts later on, but basically applying the normal recognising revenue for the goods or services you're providing for C&D. For A, the government grant, and it depends on, yes, whether we were asked to apply IS 20. So yeah, if we have to apply IS 20, then I would say then bank for the first and then credit the deferred income liability, because IS 20 tells me that my only option is to either do that or offset it against the asset, and I would not offset it against the asset. That's even worse. That's probably the worst part of IS 20, I think.
What is the worst part of it?
Offsetting against the asset.
Yeah.
And having zero. That's the worst part of it. And as you can tell, I'm not really a fan of IS 20.
You mask it well.
Yeah. I have two questions, sort of, perhaps if I could ask those before you move on to other things. So one is, why do you see the offsetting the grant against the paper the worst option? And also then, I guess, if you didn't have to follow IS 20, what would you do instead?
Well, I think because it's not portraying the economic events that have occurred, you know, you have received this government grant, you have built a plant, so I think you should recognise the asset that you have, which is the plant that you've built, and I think you should recognise the government grant that you've received. It's then a question, once you recognise the grant, is at what point in time should I recognise revenue for that grant? And so, as I say, IS 20 tells me I have to defer that. If I don't want to offset it against the asset, I have to defer it. If I didn't have IS 20 in place and I could have an alternative view of how to recognise revenue, I would probably get to a similar answer to option B. I think there's a couple of schools of thought around these types of grants. And I should say what I'm about to say is my personal view, because this is very much a live issue in the public sector. In the private not-for-profit sector at the moment, the IPSASB's got a project around revenue from both exchange and non-exchange transactions. You know, New Zealand Board are staffing that project, and just March they were talking about capital grants and when you should recognise the revenue. And by the way, the comments around IS 20 weren't terribly complimentary in that environment either. But under that school of thought, I could get to two positions. One argument is that once you've received the grant, all you have to do at that point is construct an asset. So your requirement is to exchange one asset for another asset. So some people could argue, well, there is no liability at that point. I should have revenue straight away. Another way of looking at it is to saying, well, you haven't actually received that money for free. You know, free. It's not just a donation to your business. And you do have a requirement to build the plant and connect the customers to it, which is why the second one, the property developers, the reason why they're prepared to pay these contributions is, you know, this town is not going to be much use unless people are connected to the water services. So if you look at the second one, particularly under IFRIC 18, it would lead you to the view that there's a connection service there, that you have to build the plant and connect the people to the water. The water network, and that's what the reason why you're receiving this money is to build the plant and connect them, and then once they're connected, you'll be providing water services in the usual way. I struggle with the idea of people wanting to take it further. So what I've just described is an idea around there's a performance obligation to build the plant and connect the people, which will get you revenue once you've finished building the plant and connecting, which is the same answer you get in B. But I know that sometimes people want to take that further and say, I've got an additional performance obligation, which is an ongoing requirement to provide water services over the life of this asset. I think the reason why I struggle with that is that you will be receiving revenue for providing that service anyway. It may represent a restriction on my asset that I have, and that I have to use this asset for that particular purpose. I can't decide I want to use it for another purpose. And certainly with the second example, with the property developers, there have been instances where people, because you get revenue at the point that you receive it, so this is common, like local government, for example, there could be a question, do I have to impair the asset at that point? Because if it's not going into my regulatory base, and I'm not, when I look forward about my ability to generate cash flows from using that asset to provide water services, obviously I'll be paid for the water service I'm providing, and that will cover the operational costs of providing the water service plus a margin. And whether or not you have an impairment will depend on things like the CGU and the profit margin on that, and whether that's sufficient or not. So you could potentially have an impairment issue, which you could argue is actually representative of what the economic reality is because if you've been given money to build an asset which is unable to generate revenue sufficient to its carrying amount, then you're probably only better off by the difference between the 20 million and the cash generating capacity of that asset. So say for example you worked out that was 8 million, then you might decide, well actually I'm better off by 12 million, and so you could then have revenue of 20 and impairment of 8 overall for the year. You're better off by 12, which represents the economic position.
Don't we have to be careful in this but not to go too far down the government grant and things, because the real point of these questions is whether you've got a regulatory asset or not. I would have thought, isn't it?
Well,
we were asked to apply.
Yeah. Yes, no, I understand, but for the purposes of this exercise, isn't that what we're really trying to understand?
Well, I think what we're trying to understand is really what people see as the economics behind each of these transactions and whether they are all very similar and should end up with the same sort of accounting, or whether there are differences in the accounting that should end up with different types of accounting. And then we can kind of feed that into a thought process about whether that leads you down the line of regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities.
I'm just
worried we're getting too complicated on some issues that are not totally relevant to the regulated exercise.
Well, I was talking about how to apply for, how I deal with government grants in any context, so I wouldn't have a different treatment of a grant in a rate-regulated environment compared to a non-rate-regulated environment, if that helps.
That's the point, yes.
I mean, I guess that links to a question that I just jotted down that I was going to come back to, but it sort of seems relevant now, was in this situation, because the company has received the government grant, or in option B, it's received the donation from the property developer, the regulator then effectively prohibits it from recognising any of the 20 million cost of the plant in the revenue that it charges to customers going forward. And I guess the question is does that make a difference compared to another company that may have got a government grant that could have been free to include some of that 20 million in the price it charges to customers?
Yeah, my answer, I guess, is no.
Could I just ask a question, Kimberly, on the first part of your response to Jane's previous question? Is you said, and then I'd recognize the revenue from the government grant at X point, and you talked also about revenue in respect of the contribution by the developer. Did you really mean revenue, or did you mean gain? And I'm not just tweaking you on terminology. It's because I think it's a question of, do you see there being a revenue-generating activity in terms of the obligation to build the plant, or the receipt of the plant is part of your revenue-generating activity versus a non-revenue income item?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
And I'm not playing IS-20 or vocabulary. Yeah. I'm saying, do you see there being revenue from this relationship with, and I'm assuming government and license grantor are the same for the moment. Let's not get into parsing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it depends on whether you want revenue to be, in our conceptual framework, we only have one kind of credit. So I wasn't breaking it down between revenue versus gains. I was using the term revenue in the broader sense as to when do I have income. In my financial statements.
So you were using it as income.
Again, Mary, is this relevant to the rate regulated?
I think it is, because I think for rate regulated, it's the question of, do you only have revenue for your billings to those who receive water, or do you also have revenue from fulfilling your regulatory responsibilities? That's why I think it's particularly relevant to rate regulated.
Do you have a rate regulated asset or liability?
I mean,
I think we've got to keep this pretty focused, because we can go down all those trails.
You're taking the performance obligation idea of the day and extending that to.
I'm asking whether you were thinking that a regulated entity's performance obligation extends not just to their retail customers, but also to fulfilling their conditions of service for the license. That, you know, that was the rate regulated specific point I was trying to get to.
I think the closest I could get to is by analogizing to B and say there's a connection service of building the plant and connecting the customers. That's the closest I can get to an idea that there's a service you're providing back to the...
But even there, the developers could have connected you up and just given you the whole thing to get on with.
I wasn't looking to find one. I was asking whether you thought there should be that pause and separate identity. You know, a customer type relationship seen with the license grantor.
I sort of struggle, particularly beyond the point that you've built.
I'm not saying there's right and wrong. I was asking whether your use of the word revenue indicated an assumption of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Linda?
Sure. So as a preface to my comments, and I'll try to just compare where there's differences, we actually had the ability to give this paper to our full board and have a board discussion on this topic a couple of weeks ago. I will say it was the most unruly conversation I've ever had the pleasure of chairing. You're doing a good job, Ian, because it was very hard to get them to actually focus on the questions being asked in the examples. The other thing I will say is, as part of the data sheet we provided to our board, we had the staff do an analysis of the legal structure. We picked one province. We happened to pick the province of Alberta. We looked to the legal structure within Alberta that provides the rate regulator with the powers that they have, and what the extent of those powers to exercise rate regulation, and we asked them in that discussion whether that analysis made a difference in their conclusion. So just to give you some background, and obviously I'm highly summarizing this. So I believe that in A and B, we are no different than China. And in neither of those situations did we contemplate a regulatory asset. It had to do with the notion that in those two cases, the plant was developed, funded, whatever, outside of a specific instruction from the rate regulator to the regulatory, to the regulated, to the entity. So in both of those cases, there was no regulatory asset. There was a liability. We initially called it deferred revenue, the same as you, but then we got into a whole debate whether that was the right classification, so there was some noise over that. And I will say in all situations, we ended up in exactly the same profit and loss situation in terms of there being zero profit or loss, and essentially the same revenue and depreciation for all A, B, C, and D. If you move on to C, that's where things changed. And at that point, if I can read this correctly, in year two, we saw the notion of a regulatory asset appearing to recognize the entity's right to recover the cost of the water treatment plant from the customers. And that's based on the notion of the tripartite relationship and, in their minds, the legislated powers that the rate regulator had to ensure that the entity could recover those. So that is C. And in D, while there was a timing difference because of the cadence of getting some funds up front from the customers, then getting the loan, so there was a slight delta in terms of timing, in year two, again, there was the regulatory asset. In this case, it was a different amount, the $16 million. And then in the year three, there was a reclassification of that. We did get into a very large discussion over gross versus net treatment, so we left this at gross. And so that's, in essence, where we landed.
Why wouldn't you have a regulatory asset right from when the price went up? Why are you waiting until year two? I know the plant's not built yet, but you've started collecting a premium. Right.
Against our liability?
Which we said, because we weren't delivering water yet, that created a liability and we couldn't do anything until we were actually delivering the water. That was the reasoning, Ian.
Yeah.
So I think if that's clear, Jane.
So I was just going to ask whether when you said that you saw created the regulatory asset at the end of year two, so does that mean you've got a property, plant and equipment of 20 million?
Yes.
And you've got the regulatory asset of 20 million as well, so...
Well, in D it was 16.
Or 16 in D.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the other side of your regulatory asset?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that question.
Sorry,
The other side is we initially started. This is where we initially started with deferred revenue, and then got into a big debate that you can't have deferred revenue if you don't have a contract of a customer. So we called it a liability, and we left it at that. That's as far as we got. I had to move on to other agenda items.
can I ask you a question? Maybe the other selection is Jane. You seem to have twice an asset representing the same economic resource. The property, plant and equipment of 20 that you have not written off or impaired at the time you recognize regulatory assets. So is it like having the asset and the right to use the asset in a lease, for instance, on your books?
Right. So yes, because that's where we were talking about gross versus net. What could you offset? What couldn't you offset? And so for purposes of just being able to track this, we all agreed that we would just put a gross and track the individual entries. And then we stuck very closely to a recognition discussion because I told them they couldn't talk about presentation until the next meeting. So really it had to do with that. It was a matter of trying to systematically work our way through this because we are trying to take a very fresh look at this. I happen to have three new board members who are not familiar with this project. I'm trying to get my current board members. We have some entrenched views. I'm trying to get them to open up their minds. So we took a very fresh look at this in this discussion in terms of having these examples to work with. So good timing.
Sorry, just yeah. One other quick question. In terms of once you've got your regulatory asset, what
right.
period would you then be amortizing, for want of a
yes.
word, that asset? Is it over the 40-year period that
you're
using?
Well, no, it's over the recovery period. So in C, it was 10 years. Oh, and actually, it was both of them. It was 10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah,
10 years in both. So you're you're reducing, you're amortizing that asset over the period that you are allowed to recover. Okay, it gives you a headache, I know. The fundamental difference in our view is based on the fact that the legislative powers exist. I mean, we've done another look-see on this, and there's work in progress from the staff, which I'm not ready to bring a paper yet, but we could. But we're going back to academic research, credit rating reports, previous regulatory decisions, examples of political actions that would affect the valuation of the regulatory asset, the financial risk. We're seeing regulatory balances growing in Canada. So what does that mean? That may be more measurement than recognition. And also the user perspectives. So we've got a list of things that we're diving into as we take this fresh look.
To be incremental, and this may be surprising to you, with the facts and evidence, I don't think there's any regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities. With the facts and evidence. What I think in our guidance, or at least the way I understand it and think about it, is that the rates that you're charging are cost plus revenues. And so regulatory assets or liabilities get created when something's expensed and not recovered in the rate that period. Okay. In C and D, you have a cash outflow that's going to property, plant, and equipment. That's not an expense. It's an asset, so I wouldn't double count the asset. All right. But then going forward in the accounting, I'm going to depreciate that asset over 40 years. and but I will be recovering the cost of it over 10. And the only way I get a regulatory liability here is if I extend the facts and the circumstance that says that the rate regulator says we're going to allow you to recover those costs that you had of 20 million over 10 years rather than 40, because it's not fair to you to have to recover it over that long period of time and have liabilities. So we're going to let you do depreciation for regulatory purposes over 10, but for accounting purposes over 40. And what the regulator typically will say then is that if you don't really continue to use the asset and incur those depreciation costs for the remaining 30 years, you shouldn't be able to recover those costs through revenue, because you're not going to have those costs, but you have recovered those costs ahead of time, because in the 10-year period, you're getting the full costs. So if we were to extend, so in these particular fact patterns, you're getting cash up front that you should be recovering over 40 years. And so there would be a regulatory liability that exists in the extended fact pattern, and only in the extended fact pattern, that says that if you don't use that asset for 40 years and incur the cost for 40 years, that you got to give back some of the money that you in advance collected over the 10. That creates a regulatory liability. And only in those circumstances does it create the regulatory liability that there's a mistiming of costs and recovery in revenue. And there is a mistiming here. And it's not any different from how we think about deferred income taxes. If I did a 10-year amortization for tax purposes and a 40-year amortization for accounting purposes, we'd end up having a deferred tax asset or deferred tax liability we'd recognize. What we're doing here is we're having it for regulatory purposes, a 10-year amortization, for accounting purposes, a 40-year amortization, and because the rate regulator says, I've given you all that money in advance and you're a monopoly, you could do whatever you want with it. There's no restrictions to do with that asset, you could sell it. So if you sell it ahead of time and don't actually incur the cost to produce water, I get to recover the extra money I gave you in advance. And that creates a regulatory obligation. And that was, I did this on the plane yesterday with no access to US GAAP, because there was no Wi-Fi. But then I went back and said, is that what we say in US GAAP? And it is precisely what is said. This sort of 40-year recovery versus a 10-year recovery, only when there's a mistiming of when you get in revenue the recovery of cost, either in advance, here's in advance, you get the cash before the cost, or in delay, do you ever create a regulatory asset or liability.
Tom, you seem to focus on income statement. Is there an expense or not as to that driving the whether there's a regulatory balance recognized? Now, deferred tax is a little bit different in that we look at the temporary difference between tax and accounting. How do you reconcile that difference?
Well, I think that tells you that the provision for income taxes is based on a 40-year period, but the tax is something different. That causes you the difference. Okay. That creates a deferred tax asset or liability. The provision is based on net income on a 40-year basis. The cash flow is based on a 10-year basis. That causes you to have the difference, which I don't see any different from here, is that the 40-year depreciation, although each of those years' costs are not being recovered in revenue under the rate process and a cost rate process each year. In the first 10 years, you're recovering $500,000 plus $1.5 million more each year. And that creates a timing difference that could be recovered because of the rate compact. Now, I'm just describing the common form of rate making here in the United States where it's cost plus. And because it's cost plus, I'm concentrating on the income statement and whether the cost that would be an income that would go in the rate base, in the rate making, okay, are recovered in revenues charged by the rate maker that period. And I think if I don't see how any of these things would be how a rate maker would do things. because you create the ability for an entity to have a monopoly in an area, and in all of these situations, you're letting them get their money, their recovery, before they do what they're supposed to do. And so
this is not a realistic example. Right?
Yeah, I don't. It may be. I don't think it's a realistic example. So we didn't go far. It doesn't go far enough because the rate maker has to put checks and balances in that if they give the money in advance, the monopolist does what they were committed to do for 40 years.
Right.
And so there's a commitment there to the recapture provision that is in the rate making exercise. And so, no, what I've been saying all along, just because you're regulated, it doesn't mean you have regulatory assets or liabilities. It depends on the nature of the regulation and what is committed to or
right.
in the compact. Right. And only if there's this recovery, if you don't operate for 40 years and incur those last $500,000 costs from year 11 through 40, would that only if you recover in those settings and do you have a regulatory liability here?
So I've seen examples where if the regulated entity sells some plant before the end of its useful economic life, the regulation that I've seen often will then any gain or loss on the disposal of that plant does flow through into the rates going forward. And in that case, am I right in understanding if that's the regulation, you would set up the regulatory liability because we've recovered faster?
If you got a gain, which means you got cash that was unanticipated beforehand, that you're going to therefore be penalized later for, you got a regulatory liability, so you shift that revenue to match against the costs in the later period.
Right.
If it's a loss, it's vice versa. You didn't get the cash, you're going to recover it later because it wasn't anticipated. That's a regulatory asset. So it's just the formula and how the recovery is and the guarantee of full recovery in the right period. And if you get the cash in a period other than the costs, that could potentially create a regulatory asset or liability, depending on whether the rate agreement says you're going to recover costs in that you get advance, or you're going to be hurt by cash you get in advance.
So that's tying it tightly back into that regulatory agreement and the rights and obligations
absolutely
that it's creating.
But again, it's unrealistic. I cannot see an authority giving money or an asset and then say you can sell it. You know,
That's why I said this is
unrealistic.
None of these circumstances. They're a monopoly, and they're not going to get the right to be able to just get all the money and then do whatever they want with the asset.
I mean, this takes me back to some of the responses to our request for views that we issued a couple of years ago when we were asking for descriptions of some of the regulation. And some of the responses there to the questions were saying that although sometimes the rights and obligations are maybe not explicit in the way the regulation is written, just the general scenario that it is a monopoly situation and the regulation is protecting that monopoly situation, a lot of people were reading into that, you know, the government will not allow you to recover over 10 years if you could then sell the plant and stop delivering water services, that there are those checks and balances, whether they're explicit or implicit in the regulation.
This is more similar to the IFRIC 12 concession, this one. It applies IFRIC 12 in this case.
Alexander?
I agree with Tom. It actually is similar to what old Brazilian GAAP was. You got a cost plus recovery, then you got a regulatory asset. But just to be incremental here, I believe there is a critical information missing here in example C, which is, says that you're going to have an increase so that the entity will recover the construction. But what happens if it doesn't recover? But that's a critical point. What happens that after that 10 years the entity does not recover? For example, they recover 15 million. Does the government is going to pay the difference?
Increase the rate, probably.
But because some arrangements that are actually happening in South America, the government end up paying that difference. So that changes completely, because then you have a certain revenue guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, in practice, some of the example we've seen, one of them is, yes, there is a cash payment, and going back to Alberto's point about IFRIC 12, if you look at that in a service concession arrangement situation, or just by analogy to that, if there is that cash guarantee, then there's an argument to say that that's a financial asset because it's a cash guarantee. Sometimes that
Yeah, but that piece of information changes completely, the example.
It changes the fact pattern completely, yeah.
It's not clear here if you get the guarantee or if you don't get the guarantee. So that's very important, because if you have that guarantee, you can at a certain point start to really recognize an asset, because you're not going to recover the 20 million in your example because you don't have enough demand. And sometimes the government guarantees that, some sort of a hedge in the firm. Then you create a different layer of an asset.
Sometimes in the rate making agreement too, it's not just if you get cash ahead of time or behind. Because what you end up in a cost plus rate making is you take the expenditures that are going to be recovered, that's all in the base, and then you take a regulatory asset base and get a return and get the profit margin. You divide it by expected demand to get a revenue per kilowatt hour or water, or whatever, the gallons of water. But what happens is a commitment to adjust if demand's off significantly to catch up for under demand or over demand. And that would also potentially, if there's that commitment, create the possibility of a regulatory asset or liability.
In that specific case.
Yeah.
Tricia.
Well, most of what we said covered the grant that's already been travelled. And it really was people trying to replicate how an, in quotes, normal company would account. And the only way to spread the revenue over the 40 years is to say, well, it must be an obligation to deliver water. Then we had the Maverick. And the Maverick said, no, look, this is a completely different industry. Maybe we need to think again. And if we take cases A and B, we've got a case where the rate-regulated entity is given the plant at no cost. They are not going to be allowed to recover that cost of the plant through revenue. The revenue is going to be fixed. Theoretically, it in fact should reduce per customer, because the same revenue requirement adjusted for variable costs is spread over a larger customer base. So maybe we should account for the economics, which is the plant is recovered zero. And I mean, I know Kimberly hated the thought of doing that, but you're not recovering it through revenue. What you're recovering is the variable, the incremental costs, and you then account for the revenue and the expenses and basically take the capital and the depreciation out of the system. But that was the Maverick. Everybody else was pretty much in line with what we're hearing here. But they said, well, rate, if it's different, it's very different, rather than trying to overlay normal accounting onto an economically different environment.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Well, in A, looking at the government grants, I must say my initial reaction was to actually go the offsetting route and not to go the deferred income, on the basis that, again, under the current models, what is the cost to the entity of this asset and of the plant, and the cost is arguably zero. So that was the route that I went. So although you're recognizing the plant, the cost is zero. And I analogized the option B to A on the basis that, well, in substance, it's the same economic effect. So I wouldn't expect a difference, and so again I went with the cost of the plant being nil under B. So I didn't have a liability under A or B in terms of the.
Sorry, you had a 20 million profit in.
No, I had nothing because my cost is zero.
Offset it against the plant.
Yes, offset.
You've got a bit of plant that's valuable, but you're carrying it at zero.
Correct, and the note disclosure would show that there's a plant and and there was that benefit. So now I wouldn't have income or expense, but I would have, you know, net assets of zero in respect of the plant and the liability. And so no rate regulatory.
Sorry, I don't understand. So you have an asset of 20 million?
No,
an
asset of
zero.
So government grant, debit cash,
IS 20.
Credit
I still
ask one of you have a choice of putting asset liability separate or netting them to zero.
Yeah.
Or just take the profits. Yeah,
that
is, no, you can't.
Oh.
No,
okay.
You
don't.
I know,
but
deprecating
would be an option
within
scenario B. But I agree with Ian. I don't, to me, the whole government grant issue, I don't see it being unique to the rate regulatory entity. I think it's more pervasive across the board. So not to get bogged down in the government grant aspect. Under C and D, I didn't end up with a rate regulatory asset or liability either. I guess I went down the sort of normal company route. But if I may, Tom, just you were saying that if there was a clause in the rate regulatory agreement whereby the entity couldn't just stop operating after 10 years and do whatever it wants with the cash, etc., is that a formal term in the agreement that if they were to do that, they would be required to refund and have an outflow of cash?
Probably.
Because, I mean, if that is the term, then I can clearly see
it's either an outflow of cash or a lower rate for the ongoing water they supply with their old plant.
And those are
either
quite different situations.
They are, because exactly. I mean, if they were to sell that plant and whatever and decide just to close down, are you saying that in some instances they wouldn't be required to give a cash refund?
But to sell the plant to whom? Somebody who has to provide the same service. So
well, even if it is, it's not the entity itself doesn't have the liability.
It will depend on the agreement whether there's a recapture immediately or whether they're saying because you have a monopoly and you must exist, we're going to, for the remainder of that time period, not allow at a $500,000 a year that much revenue each year. It'll depend on the agreement. But because they have to exist, that's part of the regulatory agreement that they have a monopoly and they must provide the services. But these agreements never said you must keep the plant. We give you money for the plant ahead of time and stop is all of the language in here. Every one of the ones that I think would create a regulatory liability would either be a cash capture or a lowering of the revenue for the next 30 years at $500,000. So in the next 30 years, you're going to have a potential expense or not an expense. If you kept the asset but didn't operate it, you might be still depreciating that you couldn't recover. Okay. Or if you rid yourself of the asset, obviously you're not going to get the revenue because there will be no cost to recover.
If the company has a monopoly for the next 30 years, it is unable to sell the bloody plant to anybody.
I think these are pretty hypothetical situations.
Right.
I think we should just move on.
Sorry.
I was going to say that the hypothetical situation is that you can just sell the plant or you can close down because, as we say, these are environments where there's a monopoly supplier of essential services. So you can't have a situation where the entity W just decides to sell off its plant and close down because then people in the town, in the city, don't get water services. So Alberto's right, the company entity W, if it wanted to close down and stop providing water services, would typically have to get the approval of the rate regulator to transfer the business to another entity. That purchaser coming in would pay a lower rate for business because they will be subject to exactly the same rate restrictions going forward or the regulatory terms going forward. So I think in this case, you know, we've talked about you could, if you sold the plant or the business, you may have to do a cash refund to the regulator, not that common from my understanding, or you get a reduction of the rate going forward,
or you get, if it's a transfer of the business, you get a smaller price for selling the business because the incoming operator will have to provide those services at the reduced rate.
No.
Thank you. Our analysis would be the same as Kim's, I think. We would offset the grant against the asset. And the reason would be that we believe all PP&E should be measured at historical cost initially. And in the cases of A and B, I think the historical cost would be zero based on the company not being required to pay anything from its pocket at all. Other than that, I think I'm interested.
So you'd also not see any regulatory assets or liabilities?
No, we will go under a normal company path for C&D.
Okay. 1E?
Yes.
First, Alex, just to deliver our EOSIS members' views. Option A and B, say that you should recognize it, account for as deferred income. And some people say that in the case of option B, maybe we can choose deferred income or revenue immediately. In the case of option C and D, one member supported a revenue adjusted approach or cost adjusted approach, but the other member said that there should be no adjustment in the regulatory assets or liabilities. And then I just would like to make some general comments from a broader perspective, rather than focusing on these illustrative examples. My first point is issue of what and why. While reading this paper, I asked myself, why are we doing this? And I asked myself, could we come up with a conceptual keyword that can explain what the defined rate regulation is? I could analogize to the concept control for consolidation and significant influence for equity method accounting. Suppose we can use the word discretion as the keyword for defined rate regulation. I mean by discretion that if a regulator exercises substantial discretion over the pricing mechanism of a regulated entity, we need a special accounting. I would call this special accounting regulated accounting. And regulated accounting implies that the financial statements of a regulated entity reflects the discretionary effects of a regulator. In other words, the regulator and the regulated entity is treated as a single unit when it comes to the interaction with customers. That's my first point. And my second point is issue of who. If we apply the regulated accounting, I guess we may require entities, we can make it mandatory or optional, because since it would be very different from normal accounting requirements, I think we can think of whether regulatory accounting should be mandatory or optional. And my third point is issue of how, if we adopt regulated accounting, how we account for those regulated accounting. I think we can analogize to or adopt the method of linked presentation or linking principle for regulated accounting, so that we can clearly show how a regulated account is associated with related items. I propose the linking principle because of the purpose of the financial statements of a regulated entity. I think the purpose of it is different from that of a for-profit entity. A regulated entity does not aim to demonstrate how much they make profit by presenting the information in the financial statements. They just aim to demonstrate whether it achieved a balance of income and expense. In other words, a regulated entity does not purpose to maximize profits.
That one here, I wonder if that is true. I think these are for-profit organizations.
Absolutely.
And they want to show stable earnings so that they get interest of investors. That's what this is all about.
Have covenants.
Yes.
Covenants.
They care about.
They have covenants.
Yeah.
They care about regulatory.
So this is not for profit sector.
Yeah, I know that it's not for profit sector, but they are restricted. Their activities are restricted by pricing mechanism, and the government provides a very public service to customers. And if we consider government and regulatory entity together, so we are in the, now we are talking about this issue, supposing that the government and the regulatory entity as a single unit. So in that case, we can say that the regulatory entity is not, well, truly purporting to maximize profit, just as other for-profit entities do. So with that in mind, in the illustrative example of this step paper, I think under the regulatory accounting, presenting PPE deducted by regulatory account would be appropriate by clearly showing whether the entity achieved a balance of income and expense. And in addition to that, I was wondering while reading the paper if we could think of the nature of regulated liability by associating with financing in the case of option C and D. In the fact patterns of option C and D, loans are repaid in installments from 2004. I think the nature of the regulated liability in those cases is financing from customers. Why do customers deliver CU2 every year when the value of the annual service they receive is CU0.5? I guess it's because the regulated entity wants to repay the third party loan. However, the nature of the regulated liability transforms into deferred income when the regulated entity actually repays the third party loan. I guess it is like the regulated entity saying to the customers, I will repay CU1.5 to you, but customers are saying, you don't have to repay CU1.5. Instead, you can treat those amounts as the payment we will make for the remaining service period. I guess this transformation process of the regulatory liability is implicit. So that's just my comment.
Yeah, thank you. Can I just ask you one clarifying question, Wonhee? On that last point that you were making, if I heard correctly, you were talking about from the customer's perspective, they're receiving the same service throughout the 40-year period, right, although they're paying $2 million for that service in the first 10 years or $2 million per year, but then are only, and then are paying nothing effectively for that service going forward. And did I understand you correctly that in that scenario you would look to create a regulatory liability because those customers are in effect paying in advance for the later service just to enable the company to repay its loan installments?
Yes,
I understand,
right,
correctly.
Yes, they pay in advance.
Yeah, thank you.
Mary?
A couple of observations and maybe questions for further comments on this. One observation, going back to the feedback we got on our discussion paper and something teed up, is the strong encouragement we got to take an approach based on the revenue recognition model. And they weren't saying shove it into the scope of 15, mm-hmm, but think more from a look at the timing of recognition of revenue rather than a timing of recognition of expense for cost. You know, that was broadly the feedback that we got. And one thing this discussion has highlighted for me is I think people may be looking at and either accepting or rejecting, you know, the revenue thinking in terms of when do we recognize an item in, you know, in what period, and you know, what's the performance obligation, but we're still thinking in cost terms. And maybe we also prompted that thinking by setting out the debits and credits for the amounts the entity had as cash flows. But we aren't taking, you know, if you really were taking a revenue-driven approach, you would be thinking not just of what were the costs, but also what is the revenue that the entity is going to recognize. Now, in this scenario, if you're recovering, so let me see, it would be under D, for example, where it's partly prospective, the amount under C, under C, if the, you know, if you think about 15, if you're going to get revenue in the future for something you've done today, if you receive money today, you're going to recognize the revenue later. I don't want to screw this up, but basically you are recognizing a discounted amount, and you would accrete, I'm trying to think, you would accrete interest income. But what I'm trying to get to is it would only match up to your cost if the rate you'd use to accrete were the same as the rate that the regulator was allowing for the future billings. And so everybody here has been talking about the entity's cash flow, so talking really just about the cost portion, not about the revenue amount. So we seem to be looking to, you know, to the extent somebody's looking at the revenue model, we seem to be looking to it for guidance about when, but not what amount, because presumably explicitly in these scenarios, the regulator is allowing not just recovery of cost, but also of the regulatory specified margin on that. So if people could think about whether they really still want a cost basis in terms of the amount, or whether they're thinking of the whole shebang in terms of, that being a technical term, the revenue model, that would be helpful. And the other is, Tom, a lot of your comments, and I think people were latching on to, was this notion of a cost plus regulatory environment. But I think a lot of the feedback that we got in the original request reviews was that there are relatively few pure cost plus regulatory models today. So that takes me to the second challenge to people when you're talking about things that will be recovered through future billings or adjustments that will have to be made. Are we really separating out very high probability from things that meet the definition of asset to the entity? Because you have a, let's say, from an asset perspective, current right. And I think if we think the liability side, sometimes it's easier to discuss because you can see where in IFRS 15 thinking you may not have completely satisfied the performance obligation. So you see some kind of deferred revenue, deferred income. But please be specific if you think there's really an asset controlled if what you have is the right to future billings in the future. I'm not saying you can't say that. I'm just saying please be clear if you think it really is an asset as opposed to a high probability future event.
Mary, I've been saying all along, this isn't about likelihood. This is a regulatory compact that says if I incur a cost this period that wasn't in the rate that I'm charging this period, only if the regulatory compact says those costs I'm committing to let you recover in a future period, will that be a regulatory asset. And the reason why on that side it's only cost basis, until you do the future rate making, you don't know the profit that they're going to build into the rate. So all you know is you're going to recover the cost, and you don't know how much profit. But if it's the opposite, like here, what you've got is you are allowed to collect the cost plus the margin ahead of time.
Yeah.
And there is a legal commitment that if you don't carry off your commitment, you got to give it back somehow. Then it's the cost plus the margin that you collect that you've got to give back. And so there's different measurements depending on whether you get the cash ahead of time in revenue or will collect it later. So it's not both cost or cost plus margin. It depends on whether it's ahead of time or afterwards that you're going
to
be doing.
So interesting to bring out that difference in measurement depending upon whether you got to charge the margin in advance so that you have a blended cost plus margin versus cost approach depending upon what it is. So you're following kind of the revenue model if you've been able to charge that. Sorry, the revenue model for the amount if you've been able to charge it.
Right.
But you're not following the, you know, the IFRS 15 notion of revenue.
Right.
If it's to be collected in future.
Yeah, you have an asset that can be recovered with a margin in the future committed, but you don't know the margin.
But you're measuring it not at its present value, but at its cost.
Okay. Patrick.
Three observations. The first one, listening to all of us, I think that the overall goal of the standard on rate-regulated activities would be to be very careful not to overstate profit. And that is a principle that we can all adhere to. The second one is that at the end of the day, in the four cases, we are trying hard precisely to apply the principle. But the third observation is that in real life, it's very rare to have a contract that specifies that this new investment will be amortized in a specific way. So in fact, you're confronted with a negotiation between the provider and the authority that is a package in which you are unable to say on which period you are going to amortize the additional rate that you're going to receive. Because there are 25 factors. At the end of the day, it's like Marrakesh, and people discuss and obtain 1%, 1.5%. And at the end of the day, so there is a risk. I don't know how to tackle that. I think because these examples are very clear cut, that so we can find the answer. But in real world, it's more complex than that, I think, and more complexified. In particular, if you're a monopoly with, I don't know, 25 water plants.
How can we possibly fix the accounting for this? For Marrakesh.
Well, you know what? You trust the rate regulator because he's going to push down the profit anyway. So I think, from experience, I think that has always been the case. The rate regulators have been pushing down the rates. Of course, the suppliers are trying to explain costs so that they include already the margin in it, because that's roughly what happens. And then there is a balance in between, and that's life. And you renegotiate every 2 years, every 3 years, if you have a monopoly. And therefore, I think the closer we are to real life, as if it was not rate regulated, and as if the rate regulator is like a customer, the better.
So where are you heading with this, Patrick?
I'm saying we can have a standard on rate regulated activities that explains this, but it might be applicable in 5% of the cases, because in the other cases you will find a mix of solutions. Therefore, let's think in terms of impact assessment. If just the market relationship between a rate regulator that is representing the customers and the supplier is not the best indication, that at the end of the day, cost being taken normally, as in any other business, you are not too far from the real profit. I'm asking myself. I have no, but I know the difficulties because I've audited companies like that.
Yeah, but if I understand you correctly, my own fear in this project is that this works well if you have a simple cost plus model, but that is a model that is being abandoned
not everywhere, but it's increasingly being replaced or being nuanced at least. And in reality, these relationships are much more complex, as you just described. Can we possibly capture that in a standard?
I think, as I said, Tom. I think that the rate regulators are not fools, so they know perfectly the intricacies of the game, and therefore they make sure that they have a reasonable approach to the rate for every year they cover.
Sure.
And as a consequence, if we, if the provider is taking the expenses properly, as if he was, as if he was confronted to the customers directly, are we so far from reality? At the end of the day, I'm asking myself, in terms of profit, if the assumption is not to, of course, overstate profit.
So you would just follow the regulatory determination of profit in recognizing your financial reporting?
If it is, for financial reporting purposes. Mario, if it is as clear as it is here, I would follow the solutions that have been mentioned here. I'm not talking about classification, but in terms of profit determination. Now, if it's unclear, I don't know. I don't know how you... If, for instance, the 10-year period is not mentioned, how do you do? It's very normally a rate regulator is going to push down and probably try to go till the end of the 40 years in terms of amortization, etc. And if there is a cash arrangement, it's going to be something else. In most cases, I think.
Hans, I don't know that it has to be cost plus explicitly. I'd limit it to circumstances where there's an enforceable agreement between the regulator and the regulatee that if they incur unexpected costs, that there's a commitment to put it in future rates, or if they get cash up front and they don't behave like they do, it'll be recaptured. And if that's not the case, that it's likely they could put it in rates or likely be recaptured somehow, no regulatory asset there. Not a likelihood sort of thing. It's in the agreement.
It has to be contractual.
It has to be contractual.
And then they go.
I'd like to come back to the exam question. I agree scope is important, but to my mind, you have to solve some of the basic accounting first. When I look at this example, I see a lot of similarities between the four situations. So I think that the accounting should show a lot of similarities as well. And to my mind, there is a government grant in each case. Though there's only an explicit government grant in the first one, there is an implicit government grant in the others as well, which is why I think the government grant accounting is key to this whole situation. And it's really about how the government is assisting this entity. So there's direct cash assistance in the first case. There's assistance by the government forcing the constructor to provide the plant for free. Effectively, they are taxing the construction company.
Well, the construction are going to recoup somewhere.
They're taxing the construction company to provide me with the benefit. In option A, they're taxing the population as a whole to provide me with the benefit. In C, the people paying the tax are my customers, and the government is forcing them to give me the extra money. So in each case, I'm getting government assistance, either directly, indirectly, or through a regulation that benefits me in terms of me having higher revenue. So it seems to me that I should show a government grant in each case. I also have the same asset in each case. So it seems to me I should have the same asset balance in each situation as well. So I think we need to start with the economics. Now, there are differences, of course, with the economics, because in A and B, my government assistance is upfront and guaranteed. In C, there is some uncertainty about the extent of my government assistance because, Alessandro said, it depends upon the demand for my product. So there's a difference there. But we should then think, well, does that difference then justify a difference in the accounting? And if the government, for example, is standing behind the additional revenue, and if I don't sell enough of my product, they'll step in. Well, there is no difference. And if they don't step in, well, we need to think about whether that difference justifies the difference in the accounting. So in the end, I ended up with a method of accounting that nobody's mentioned yet, although it's closest to Linda with Tom's overlay. I can add that. So in A, I'd have government grant. I would recognize it over the 40 years because I do think there is a continuing obligation. The government is not going to allow me to walk away. In B, I would do exactly what I think Linda said about doing the gross up. So I'd have PP&E of 20 and I'd have, and you called it deferred revenue, deferred income. Well, I call it a government grant because I think that's what it is. The government's providing me with assistance. I would do the same thing in C. I would have a government grant, but then I would have a regulatory asset. So I would have credit government grant 20, regulatory asset 20. Now, I know, Tom, you said regulatory liability, but that would arise if you didn't do that accounting entry, then you would end up with the liability.
Right.
So
that's right.
But I think you said, Linda, doing exactly that gross up.
But that the gross up, actually, I forgot to mention, what Tom said is what current Canadian practice would have been,
but
the IFRS 14. What the board talked about was what we're just talking about now, where you recognize the regulatory asset and the offsetting liability. So what the board is saying is maybe our methodology will change if you follow this reasoning.
Yeah, and so I would have a government grant liability in C, which would be recognized over 40 years, but a regulatory asset, which would be recognized over 10 years.
Correct.
Effectively, that regulatory asset is the receivable of 2 for 10 years.
That's right.
And it's repaid from the tax.
The tax to the
existing
customers. That's right.
So I would end up with accounting, which I think would better reflect the economics, being that the economics of these situations are very similar. D is just a variation on C, so
right.
I'll leave that.
Yeah,
thank you. I'm Chang, but we're going there. Capitalist and socialist. I'm just asking. thank you, sorry. Just kidding. I'd like to say thank you for your really valuable advice on this issue, but there are basically, most of you are saying there's no need for the regulatory accounting, except maybe Tom and Linda. Maybe I have the similar point as Steve's just has made. I'd like to ask some clarification question on Linda's you explained that. On that another account of the examples, the option C.
Yep.
And D, you recognize, you recommend to recognize another regulatory asset balance of £20 or £16. So it seems to me that approach is really reflecting maybe the economics or the effects of this kind of regulatory, some kind of the activities here. Even though that is showing a kind of a double amount of revenue or some expenses, like a service concession arrangement, the intangible model. However, in the case of an intangible model of a service concession arrangement, there's no need to recognize PP&E there. So they just recognize one asset, that is the intangible asset. Here, we should recognize two assets, big issues. One is the PP&E, another one a kind of intangible asset. So it seems to me your idea is quite consistent with the similar economic transaction of a service concession arrangement with this. So it seems quite reasonable, to suggest such kind of a thing. So my question is, your approach, your idea is trying to reflect best the effect of a regulation of this kind of industries. Is that right?
Right. So as I mentioned, in preparation for our discussion at our board, we had done this detailed analysis of the legislative environment. And the board was persuaded by that analysis, and I have it here, that you cannot ignore And so we didn't get far enough in this, because the next step we're going to do is, what do we know about the historical pattern of recognizing those regulatory assets and liabilities, and what political actions might affect measurement of them. But the board was very much persuaded that if you do not take that into consideration, you're not recognizing the full economics, and you have a legal environment that says that you will recover these. And as well, the feedback we had from users was that if they don't see those in the primary financial statements, that those primary financial statements aren't going to fully reflect the economics. So it was both part of that discussion.
Yeah, another point that is, if you what you are suggesting, that additional asset balance is looks like inconsistent with the US GAAP now.
Yes, yeah, it is different.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's different from
it
current Canadian
GAAP. This kind of activity. But still, you are insisting that we need another asset balance on the balance sheet, right?
So, well, interesting, because as far we got that far, and then we all agreed we needed to have another conversation on ultimate presentation on the balance sheet, because there were some people who said you should net all this off, and there were others who felt all the full amounts, the gross amounts, should be on the balance sheet. So we're going to keep talking about that.
Okay. One more thing, you know, have you ever thought about the possibility of recognizing some revenues in year one and year two?
We did. You know what? We did have a brief conversation about that, and so the staff is going to take another look at that. I fully expect that we will be discussing this topic over the next few board meetings.
Yeah, please do so, because currently some in practice in the European companies, they are recognizing some revenues in year one, year two, before the company
yes.
into construction.
Yes. And so I've had a couple of conversations with my board members on that. We're going to bring that back.
Not everyone.
Not sure.
Yep. Maybe Patricia might help me with this kind of evidence, because IFRED surveyed some many companies in the European.
Okay.
So some companies are recognizing some kind of accelerated revenue before the finishing the construction.
Because some regulatory compacts give you return for either the loan that you had or allowance or funds used during construction.
All right.
So
interesting.
So
you're allowed to recover that.
So in the compact, they say, because you're not going to incur the cost till later and you're building it for many years, you either get a allowance for funds used during construction built into the regulatory and get revenue, or you're allowed to record an asset called construction in process.
Right.
That's a cost that's recovered. But only if that's what's in the regulatory compact do you get that in revenue.
Yes,
earlier.
Yeah, maybe you're right, but in this area, we are using some kind of jargon, some kind of fast money recovery, or the slow money recovery. So in the case of slow money recovery, by some kind of regulated prices or rates, it takes about 40 years, or 10 years, depending on the recovery collection period. However, some money of that construction cost, we call that the fast money recovery, maybe a small part of the total periodic regulatory prices. Some part is recognized very early, year one and year two, to make a kind of to show kind of recovery of this construction cost. So that's what I'm saying, that even though most of the here, you know, are objecting any new special accounting. However, at this stage, you know, we should explore more if there is any more good accounting to present to show this kind of effect of some regulatory, some kind of activities. So I guess I'm saying that most of what you are saying is that our current normal accounting will solve every issue in these examples, option A and B and C and D, except from the regulatory obligation, you know, in the difference of this depreciation and collection. However, I think even though the US GAAP 71, I guess this is not a comprehensive regulatory accounting standard, it seems to me, because you are using some kind of expedient, just focusing on some specified costs, and some kind of cost of equity, and there you can recognize, you should recognize some kind of asset. So, however, if we just approach this about this issue with a more based on some economics of the, this kind of regulatory activities and that their its effect on companies in the markets, maybe the users might prefer some more information, regardless of that's recognized on the balance sheet or income statement or in the notes. However, this is very important. So we should, this is a very good opportunity, you know, to examine more thoroughly on this issue, that's what I'm saying.
Alexander and Kimberly, so we have to close this conversation.
A very quick point here. Most of the examples that we have been discussing relate to utilities, like electricity, gas, etc. And I'd like to see some other examples of rate-regulated activities in other sectors that are not utilities, like in the financial sector, for example, when the government has a promise to buy student loans for a certain price if interest rates decline over a certain level. So there are whole sort of rate-regulated activities that are not on gas, electricity, water, etc. So I believe you should mention that.
You want to widen the can of worms?
No, it's a kind of incentive for financial institutions. In Chile, that's what's happened. So.
Kimberly?
Just three quick points. I think one of the underlying assumptions in all this conversation has been that the 20 million, and that Steve's arguments around it being a government grant, it seems to be an underlying assumption that the price he started off with equals the fair value of the water services being provided, and therefore you can separate out this. And I think that's an assumption that needs examining, given that rate that you started out with was itself a regulated rate. So I think that's something that needs to be thought about, particularly if you're trying to apply IFRS 15 type thinking. The second thing to think about is in terms of testing your thinking, because I know you're trying to sort of see, can we get this into the conceptual framework views around assets and liabilities, etc., and using some of the thinking IFRS 15. One way to test your thinking is to imagine you have a business combination partway through. Think about what the acquirer would put on their balance sheet in the way of assets and liabilities. I think that may well reveal that some of the things that people have got on here really are the matching, you know, the things that people are wanting to put on their balance sheet as assets or liabilities are a consequence of really wanting to get the performance statement reflecting the rate regulated environment. And I do understand why people want to get there. I do understand why people want to have these regulatory assets and liabilities, and because they feel that otherwise the performance statement's not necessarily reflecting the performance. So, but I think that then might lead you down to a track of, we do have to have some sort of special accounting if we feel that the economics of this are different to the normal environment. And then of course it will be a scoping issue in terms of how are you going to put it around.
Since only two of us said we wanted regulatory assets and liabilities, it has nothing to do with matching. Nothing. It has to do with accounting for enforceable rights and regulatory agreements.
Right. Maybe we want to then think about what that would look like in a business combination, because it might, I suspect it could be a license, which is not the track that people want to put in.
I think you have a regulatory asset if the regulator commits to giving you money in the future under an agreement.
This is your asset. All of your ability to operate in that environment and charge not only that increased price but the regulated price. It's basically your operating license.
But that's what the fine rate regulation's about. You have a monopoly and you will provide the services. Yeah. And if you're not in that environment, you're not going to have those compacts.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But I think there is an asset, and these are represent increases and decreases in that asset.
Okay.
I think everybody contributed hugely to the conversation, and I have now got a headache officially. I've been going through the water, but I've got a good headache in that I've got lots of new information to think about for future analysis, and like Linda's board, there will be future instalments. Yes.
Take a break till 3:35.